Like many diplomats, Staples was optimistic about the potential of the United States to help improve a country such as Equatorial Guinea. Here it seemed more apparent than usual that American corporations and international non-governmental organizations could lift the quality of life and governance. When he visited Malabo, Staples sometimes stayed overnight at the compounds of the several international oil companies, including ExxonMobil's. Construction of international business hotels was underway in Malabo, but none had yet been opened, and the State Department had yet to lease its own housing. The oil industry executives he met during these stays spoke highly of Equatorial Guinea's potential to become an African success story. The ambassador suggested ideas to his hosts, including ExxonMobil, about how they might directly contribute to Equatorial Guinea's development outside of pumping oil, by flying in teachers to run seminars on business formation, accounting, and the like. Staples soon learned, however, that while ExxonMobil's local representatives were sympathetic and interested, they had trouble winning approval for such initiatives from headquarters. ExxonMobil, along with Marathon and other firms, did invest in malaria eradication in Equatorial Guinea, but the corporation shied away from anything that smacked of interaction with the country's politics or business classes. ExxonMobil's lawyers in the upstream division in Houston feared, for example, that if they trained young Equatoguinean people and their businesses subsequently failed, the oil corporation might be somehow judged liable. To the American ambassador, this seemed careful in the extreme, but it did in fact reflect ExxonMobil's broader strategy in poor and volatile countries. The corporation did not wish for Obiang's government to confuse the issues of concern to any Washington administration, human rights, the quality of elections, the welfare of citizens, with the issues of concern to ExxonMobil, which were largely limited to the production of oil and the sanctity of contracts. "We are an oil company. We are not the Red Cross," as Andre Madek, an ExxonMobil executive who oversaw global community relations, once put it. "We don't want to be seen as the de facto administration." Obiang remained optimistic about the strategic partnership he could eventually build in Washington through oil and security. The president bought big houses for family members throughout the suburban Washington region, and he traveled regularly to the capital and to New York. At the Riggs branch on Pennsylvania Avenue, Obiang's aides arrived with heavy bulging suitcases filled with plastic-wrapped $100 bills, up to $3 million at a time, and handed them over as cash deposits, which Riggs's account managers gratefully accepted. In tandem with the oil companies and Obiang's paid lobbyists, Riggs's executives tried to burnish Obiang's reputation as best they could. "The president has requested to come to the bank to pay a courtesy call and brief us on developments on Equatorial Guinea," Simon Kareri, the bank's African-born account manager handling the Obiang and related accounts, wrote to Joseph Albritton, the bank's chairman, early in the summer of 2003. "I would like to suggest that we recommend that the president hire a PR firm." Kareri briefed the bank's leaders on the political risk equations surrounding their idiosyncratic client. There was potential for coups or internal fracturing in Equatorial Guinea, and yet major American oil companies had established a significant presence in the country, and U.S. officials appear anxious to maintain good relations, he noted. The country could be valuable to the U.S. from a geostrategic view, given its location in Central Africa and the abundance of oil. Obiang passed through the branch's soaring columns and into a paneled conference room one day early that July. The bank's senior executives listened as the president described his country's progress. Obiang mentioned that there had been pressure from other banking and financial institutions to move some of his business elsewhere, on the grounds that Riggs was not equipped to handle all of the nation's finances. "However, the president's regard and loyalty to Riggs is unquestionable because he has dismissed all possible suitors as speculators," Kareri's notes of the meeting recorded. As to the allegations about his human rights record, publicized by Human Rights Watch and others, Obiang told the bank executives that he had not reacted to the innuendos about such matters. "The president clearly regards his engagement of such discussion as demeaning to his stature," Kareri noted. Obiang did have one piece of business he wished to mention while he was visiting his bank. He requested a $34.4 million loan to purchase a presidential jet from Boeing Corporation, a 737-700 that would be outfitted with a king-size bed and gold-plated bathroom fixtures.